Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Homer's The Odyssey has been analyzed and adapted hundreds, perhaps thousands of times, and yet something about the epic poem continues to draw readers and scholars and artists near again and again. Joe Goodkin brings his 30-minute original music composition for solo acoustic guitar and voice to the University of South Dakota in Vermilion tonight. That starts at 7 p.m. in Farber Hall, Old Main. But first, he is in the SDPB studios in Vermilion with us now. Joe Goodkin, welcome. Oh,
thank you so much for having me.
This is something that we actually coordinated quite some time ago, and I have been looking forward to meeting you ever since. So thank you so much for making the time to spend with us. First time in South Dakota.
Yeah, first day I've ever woken up in South Dakota.
So, welcome.
Yeah, it's a beautiful day too. So
let's go back to the first time you remember reading The Odyssey. Did it captivate you right away, or did you come at it from maybe a high school or middle school perspective where it was a slog and then it revealed its secrets to you later?
Yeah, I think I came into contact with it like many people do in high school, and it was part of a kind of a Greek myth unit. And I liked it well enough. I liked stories. But I got to college and I became what I call an accidental classics major. I took ancient Greek language my first semester freshman year, fell in love with it. And by the second semester, I was a classics major. So I got a chance to read a big part of the Odyssey in actual ancient Greek, and then as well as part of a couple other classes. And it, captivates kind of an understatement for me. I think it's kind of the most incredible story ever told, both in form and content. So
I got a little chills when you said you read it in ancient Greek. That didn't really tell me what the text was like. Was it, you know, an actual, like where do you find
it's,
that?
It's, well, you know, they publish definitive versions of it, but it is, my standard line about the first time you read Homer in Greek is that you feel like your head and heart are exploding at the same time.
Yeah.
It's like an organism. It's pretty stunning. I hope and pray more people take Greek so they can do it. It's wonderful in English. It translates extremely well, the story. I think it's very relevant, but there's something about the actual original language and being able to kind of get your head inside it that's pretty incredible. Yeah.
So for listeners who are trying to remember their Homer right now, this is Odysseus's journey. This is trying to come home.
Correct.
This is Penelope at the loom,
yes,
and
right,
the suitors,
yeah,
downstairs, and the murder of those suitors at the end.
Exactly right. Yeah. Spoiler alert. No.
Right. it's violent. It's,
yeah,
you know, there's, and of course then there's all the, you know, the mythology, the creatures and
exactly,
the Cyclops and,
yeah,
and everybody. This is the Odyssey.
It's what's called a nostos, which means homecoming in ancient Greek.
Okay.
And so every hero who fought at the Trojan War, or most heroes, which is, you know, a portion of which is addressed in Homer's other poem, the Iliad, would have had a nostos, a returning from Troy back to home. And kind of the most famous other one is Agamemnon, comes home and is killed by his wife and her lover. But every one of those heroes would have kind of had their own epic story told by these bards. The English word nostalgia means homesickness, actually, which is a wonderful etymology, I think, that nostos is part of the nostalgia, and algos is pain, like analgesic. So the Odyssey is Homer's, supposedly Homer's retelling of Odysseus's journey home, and half of it is dealing with his time out on the sea, which is about 10 years. It's condensed. And the other half is what happens when he actually gets home, and it's the, as you said, the reintegration and the dealing with some of the palace intrigue. And there's adventure, there's monsters, but there's also incredible family drama and family relationships. And in my opinion, a lot of consideration of identity, what it means to be a person, and I think that's what drew me into it, especially.
So many adaptations of this. One of my favorites is Margaret Atwood's The Penelope Ad, which really focuses from on the handmaidens, the ladies in waiting, and of Penelope. When did you first decide, like, there is room for another adaptation, and it's going to be mine, and it's going to look like this? When did that idea start blossoming?
I hit a couple things. I was really lucky in that I not only took the Odyssey in kind of a classical academic setting, but I had a class in comparative literature, which considered some of the other usages of it. So we read Ulysses by James Joyce. Mm-hmm. Our professor was like really interested in stretching the concept of the Odyssey and home as far as he could. So we watched like The Wizard of Oz, like There's No Place Like Home.
Sure.
We watched The Planet of the Apes. They were home all along.
Okay.
We even watched Waterworld with Kevin Costner in it. So I'm probably the only person in the world that likes that movie for that reason. So I had a sense that, you know, right off the bat that there it's such a malleable story. You can look at it from so many different ways. Right after I graduated college, I saw a stage version of it in Chicago, put together by a director named Mary Zimmerman, who's done a lot of work with classical theater, or classically themed theater in Chicago. And that was beautiful and really emotional and kind of cathartic in a way maybe that text on a page isn't.
Mm-hmm.
And then that was also right when O Brother, Where Art Thou came out, which is, you know, ostensibly a retelling of Homer's Odyssey in music especially. So I had all these different.
Yes, you have T-Bone Burnett interpreting it musically with
Coen
brothers?
Yeah, the Coen brothers, who have said publicly that they never read the Odyssey, which I think is funny and probably, you know, them fibbing just like Odysseus would. But whoever picked the song A Man of Constant Sorrow knows what they're doing. I mean, Odysseus's name means in Greek pain and sorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can actually Odysseus somebody. It happens in the text, and that means to cause somebody pain. So they nailed it as far as I was concerned, however they did it. So I was just aware of all these, you know, and there's so much room for you to filter it through yourself and see what comes out.
Right. So yours is a reaction to it, not necessarily. Explain exactly how you approached your version, Joe's Odyssey.
What I found when I started writing was I was really interested in representing kind of the characters' perspectives from a first-person point of view, which plays in nicely with the idea that there's shifting identities. I felt like as a bard, I could sing from Odysseus's point of view, I could sing from Penelope's point of view, Telemachus's point of view, and I was starting to discover things as I wrote songs for them about the characters and the story that I hadn't seen when I read it the first couple times, and it was really amazing. It opened my eyes to aspects of the relationships and really just the human relevance and the universality of a lot of it that I hadn't seen. I was kind of distracted by the Greek stuff, which is wonderful, but I found when I first studied it, I thought it was a Greek story, and when I went to adapt it, I found it was a human story that was told by the Greeks, if that makes sense.
Mm.
So
this is a part lecture, part music, and then Q&A where people can sort of ask you questions like I am doing now. And for the musical part, you have your guitar with you, and I'm wondering if you could give us a taste of something. What would you like us to hear first?
Sure. I'll play you the first song that I wrote and the first song that I sing, and it's called the Invocation, and it's called Who Am I? Greek and Roman epic begin with a poet or a bard asking the muse also known as memory, to help them tell the story for their particular audience that day. So the idea is that the bard is kind of a vessel that the muse is going to pour the story through in whatever way is going to happen that day. And on top of that, because the classical languages are so flexible, you can move words around to put them up front in sentences where you can't do it as much in Greek. So the first word of the Odyssey is actually the word man. It is sing a song about a man, a man who's done a lot of traveling, gone around. That's been translated a million ways.
Right.
And so in the Greek, andra, the word andra, man, is the first word that the poet would say or you'd read. In the Iliad, it's anger, manen, which is the anger of Achilles. Virgil came along and did the Aeneid, and he did arms and a man. So he combined literally both the Odyssey and the Iliad into his, quite obviously. So I needed to come up with kind of a topic sentence for my invocation. And that is called Who Am I? And it's about a minute and a half long, and I'll play it for you right now. Who am I, man on fire, born of you, but who am I, oi ne pas upon song, why are you
you're just tuning in, you're listening to In the Moment on SDPB Radio, giving you a little preview of Joe's Odyssey. Joe Goodkin is in the studio with us. You can see him tonight at the University of South Dakota Farber Hall at Old Main, 7 p.m. for the full program, sort of exploring, interpreting, reacting to Homer's Odyssey. Let's talk about the bard himself and this tradition, and then you, because you're sort of a self-imposed. So who were the people? How would this have been performed, back in the day?
Well, so back in the OG Homer.
Way back,
It's interesting because these poems kind of straddle the divide between oral culture and written culture. Okay. They really were formalized as writing. Greek writing was coming into being, probably stolen from some other Mediterranean culture or borrowed, adapted. So they have kind of one foot in this oral tradition where bards would go around to palaces, to cities, to villages, and after dinners, after feasts, at gatherings, they would gather around the fire and they would tell tales of famous heroes, Odysseus, Achilles, Hercules, Zeus and the gods. They'd probably also mix in a local hero just to get the crowd on their side. So there was a lot of variation. But these were professional bards. That was their entertainment. That was their Netflix. That was,
right.
And so the greatest of them supposedly was this guy Homer that we know like literally nothing about other than the Greeks of the time thought he was the best. And my best guess is somebody kind of took his tellings of them and collected them and edited them essentially and organized them a little bit better. And that's what we have with the poems that we read today. So there would have been competing traditions. There's stories of Odysseus after the Odyssey that we have today, before. It's a very fluid kind of living way of telling a story. It's weird to think about because we think we have all these stories kind of fixed either in print or but it's not. They had this real sense that the story only existed in the room that it was told in that day for that performer and the audience, and that was the story, and then it was gone. And then when you tell it again, there it is again, and there's no permanence. So it's kind of wild.
So in that sense, by that definition, it has to be adapted today in order to stay alive.
100%.
It can't be on a book on a shelf. That's not really enough.
It's another way of documenting it.
Okay,
but to me, I know I'm walking a fine line because I've composed my piece, so I'm not improvising the way the bards would have been, 3,000 years ago. But I believe it should be alive in the room. I still think performances are alive in the same way. Every performance is different. You need three things. You need a performer, a space, and an audience. Well, all three of those change. I'm a different person the next day. The space is different, and the audience is different. So the story itself, the meaning of it, the telling of it, changes, even if it seems the same. So
would the bard have been paid? Would they have been housed, fed?
Yeah.
What was the sort of exchange?
I think definitely fed and housed. We actually see that in the Odyssey. We see a couple bards in the poem be fed. I think varying levels of fame. certain bards were considered better. Certain were considered lower. But they were certainly, for the most part, I think, respected as really important. They were keepers of the story, people's stories, keepers of glory. That's how you got glory, back in ancient Greece, was people kept talking about you. They kept telling your story. That was literally for them considered immortality, was people still talking about you. So I think the bards were very valued in that way.
And what's your experience now sort of selecting, this career, this, path, this life of traveling and really being a modern-day bard in an era where there is Netflix, but yet there is a demand and a thirst for this kind of experience as well.
I couldn't have put it better. Whether it's a reaction to kind of the ephemeral digital culture, or it's just, kind of working alongside it in tandem. I walk into a room, a lot of times I don't even use a microphone. I don't know if I will tonight. I don't know how big the space is. I sing a song for 30 minutes. People are quiet. They listen. Afterwards, we talk about it as a group. We're doing the exact same thing that they did 2,800, 3,000 years ago. And I think it still probably attacks kind of the same places and people that it did. There's a kind of a visceral reaction to it, a need to hear stories, to talk about it, to hear what other people have to say about it. I suspect that the bard that put the Odyssey together empathized a lot with his hero, Odysseus, who is a guy mm-hmm. that goes around traveling, telling stories, yeah. always trying to get home, but, you know, what does home mean? I have a lot of the same experiences, even though I probably travel better than they did. I don't think they had Holiday Inn Expresses back in.
Right, but what, you know, at those moments yeah. where it might be, you know, lonely maybe is not the right yeah. word, but you have those emotions yeah. and those challenges that happen to anybody on the road, then you're learning and bringing a little more emotion to the next performance because you're connecting to 100%. Those original. Yeah,
100%. There's kind of a strain of classical study now that's called classical reception, okay. which is studying how subsequent cultures have taken classical subject material and adapted it and received it and then spit it back out in their own time. And I've somebody, I think I stole it from a professor, called what I do like a living experiment in classical reception. Essentially, I'm able to see in real time. I'm taking a classical source material. I'm putting it through myself and our time, and then I'm seeing how the audience reacts to it immediately after I tell the story. So yeah. there's a lot of wonderful, beautiful, really touching moments when I sit back and think about yeah. it. Yeah, it's very cool.
Joe Goodkin, let's hear some more music. What cool. What should we explore next about this tale?
So what I'll do is I will. This tracks exactly with Homer's version in that he tells us he's going to sing a song about a man trying to get home. And then he doesn't talk about that man again for about a sixth of the poem.
Right.
You may remember this if you've read it. It's yeah. kind of weird. He's like, this guy I'm going to talk about, but here's these other people. Yeah. It's really a brilliant storytelling technique, which is to put off our hero for four books, the sixth of the poem, and to establish what he's trying to get back home to, which is right. his wife and son. So the next thing I did was I wrote a song from his son's point of view, who was an infant when Odysseus left for Troy. So he's been on his own with just his mother for 20 years. All he wants to know is who his dad is. That's very, very important in Greek culture. It's your identity, your lineage. And on top of that, there's some tension at home because there's all these men trying to marry his mother. So the first thing that happens in the Odyssey is that Telemachus goes out to try to find news of his father, which would have been a very dangerous thing for a 20-year-old in right. you know, Bronze Age Greece to do. So I wrote a song for him. And it's called O Mother. I'm going to play that.
I'm off a midnight prayer floating on the breeze, a high noon eagle far above the trees. Well, I am on my way, I'm on my way. Father, where have you gone? Oh, Father, sail into the dawn. Oh, 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 I'm off. Midnight prayer floating on the breeze, a high noon eagle far above the trees. Well, I am on my way, I'm on my way.
Mm-hmm. Joe Goodkin is here with us today. We're giving you little snippets of Joe's Odyssey. You can see the full Seamless production tonight at USD at 7 p.m. Central Time. What's the role of the Odyssey and what you're doing in the classics in a multicultural society right now when there's so many different traditions?
Wow.
And, you know, people are making room for these other voices, but then here's Homer.
I mean, that's, wow. So this is another thing that's cool about this is I do a question and answer after every performance, and I get asked questions even after 250 performances that I've never heard before. I mean, it's amazing. It just generates thoughts and discussions and feelings. I think, well, for one thing, there have been many multicultural adaptations of Homer's Odyssey. There's a wonderful poem by Derek Walcott, the poet, called Omeros, which is a pretty out there adaptation. So I think other cultures, it's not just Western culture, that have taken, you know, the story and adapted it. It's fertile for everybody. It really is one of the archetypal stories. I think it works really well alongside just about anything. I don't think it'll. I think there's room for everything, essentially. It's not an either or, if that makes sense.
Yeah, not a zero sum.
No,
you know.
It's not. I mean, every culture has a story that serves probably similar narratives and tells, you know, and you let's get them all in there and see. Again, it goes back to this idea of understanding it as a human story first, and then what makes it an ancient Greek story. Okay, and then what makes it a an East Asian story? Let's find the same, you know, what makes it a Norse story? I mean, I'm sure there's one. I think that's, you know, I think being human first is the most important thing, if that makes sense. Yeah.
Since I love Penelope, I'm hoping that you could tell me a little bit how you've interpreted her and play something else that might tune us into that character.
Yeah, she's well, she's, I guess, not so secretly the best character in the story.
Right.
she's morally, although she also has, she has an edge. You know, the modern analogy that I make is if you're a Breaking Bad fan, you know, Skyler White's the one that figured out how to launder the money. Walter White's the genius. But she's a pretty incredible character, especially for the time in which she came out. So I was really... I wanted to do her well. I had a professor in general who had really, you know, kind of hipped us to how amazing she is as a character. So the first time we see her, though, she's very much, I think, a mother that most any mother can relate to, and that she's worried about her son going off, as I said, to possibly his doom. And so what I wanted to get out in the first song I wrote for her was this motherly love for her son and how it's the same now as it's ever been. The details have just changed. So I'll play her first song for us right now. It's called Darling Child. Darling child, don't run from me, 'cause I gave you life, I set you free. With these aged eyes, can't lose another man. You're all I have, and you're all that I am. Well, darling child, I must let you go. Your time has come, and I know it so. These aged hands can't weave another night. Well, dreams descend on mortal men,
and I'm left alone in the candlelight.
Joe Goodkin on In the Moment. You can see Joe's Odyssey tonight at USD, 7 p.m. Farber Hall in Old Main. Thank you so much. Can people purchase the entire performance on recording? Is that
so? I'm glad you asked. It's available on kind of your normal digital platforms,
okay,
for streaming on Spotify and YouTube and Apple Music. It's available for downloading also from iTunes, although I know that's almost done. It's also available in CD form, and I know very clearly that people don't buy CDs anymore, but this CD comes with a poster pullout of all the lyrics and some commentary that I wrote with the help of a classical publisher, and it's sold through my website, which is joesodyssey.com, and also at performances. So there's a lot of different ways to hear it.
We'll put a link up to your website on our website after the show, listen.sdpb.org. Some of us still buy CDs. Thank you.
And I love all of you for that. I always say they make good coasters, too. I mean,
thank you so much for stopping by.
I really appreciate the opportunity so much. Thanks.
Enjoy South Dakota.
I will.